Hello, I'm Marlene Saeed. This is Counting the Cost on Al Jazeera, your weekly look at the world of business and economics. This week, stocks have got off to their worst start since 2016, with tech sector and cryptocurrencies most affected. Critics say US markets are in a bubble that could burst any time. But are they? And how would this affect the global economy? Also this week, global food prices hit their highest levels in over a decade, and families are forced to scrimp at the dinner table. Will governments be able to bring down the rising cost of basic items? And as OPEC reopens the taps, African suppliers are struggling to pump more. Can Nigeria's long-awaited reform of its oil sector help the country catch up? We find out from the country's petroleum minister. Investing in financial markets is like a roller coaster, and you're never quite the same after the ride, a wise man said. It often feels like that, now even more so. Last year, stocks hit high after high, despite the pandemic. But now, in the face of rising inflation and a global supply chain crisis, the fast-running bull market has suffered a wave of wild trading. And some fear it's now entering into bear territory. Let's take a look at the numbers. US stocks have suffered their worst days since March of 2020, dragging down all the major indices. The S&P 500, which is a proxy for US retirement and college savings accounts, well, that has fallen more than 10% below its January 3rd record close back in 2020. The tech-heavy Nasdaq underperformed major benchmarks. It fell further into a correction in the first weeks of January, sinking more than 16% from its own record high of November 19th last year. European traders are also nervous. The Stoxx Europe 600 regional share index closed 3.8% lower on January 24th, its biggest one-day fall since June of 2020. And Asian markets racked up some losses too. That's included Japan's benchmark Nikkei, South Korea's KOSPI and China's Shanghai Composite. Some indices have since come off their lows, but trading remains volatile. So what does this all mean and what does it tell us about investors' sentiment? Obviously, technology has been the worst performing sector. That's after a boom period during the pandemic. Among the casualties are some of the most popular companies like Tesla, Netflix, Microsoft and Amazon. The S&P's best performing sectors in the early days of the year have been energy, financial services and consumer staples. Away from the stock market, riskier assets are also being dumped. Bitcoin recently dropped more than 8%, wiping out nearly half of the value of the record high reached in November. Well, part of the bull run market has a lot to do with Fed policies and the flood of easy money during the pandemic. But that's changing now. Sentiment and company earnings play a key role too in investor confidence. But there are other factors to be added to the mix, among them geopolitical tensions. So taking all these factors into consideration, there is a lot going on. And to unpack all of that, I'm joined now by Naeem Aslam, who's a chief market analyst at Evertrade. Many thanks for joining the program. What do you think's been driving the volatility in markets this year?
Thanks for having me. I think there are a number of factors which traders are considering when they want, when they're thinking of backing riskier assets. Firstly, obviously, it's the general stance among central banks around the globe to control inflation. Now, because these banks, they wanted to tackle inflation, the only way to do that is to reverse the monetary policy that they put in place to ward off the challenges posed by COVID-19. So basically, we are looking at a landscape which is going to give us something a highly hawkish monetary policy. So basically an environment of higher interest rate. Now, traders are okay with the fact that, yes, we will have a higher interest rate, but their major qualm is they do not want it to see overly or excessive hawkish monetary policy, because that could really hurt or kill economic growth that we have seen over the last number of quarters.
And the factors you're talking about, do they also apply to the Asian markets? Because we've seen falls there too.
Well, over in Asian markets, of course, the chief concern is Omicron, supply chain issues. And if you look at the PBOC, PBOC has a slightly different stance in relation to the Bank of England, Bank of Canada, the Federal Reserve, the ECB. They are still lowering the criteria for lending for banks. So we still have a more sort of an easy monetary policy with respect to the PBOC, because they still want to boost the economic activity. Of course, other central banks want to do that as well. But inflation isn't a chief or a primary concern for the PBOC. Supply chain issues and rising energy prices are major concerns.
Okay. When you look at how high stocks have actually gone in the long run over a period of time, the recent falls don't seem so much. So all this talk of a bear market, are we over-egging the issue?
Well, by definition, a bear market is when market retraces 10% from its recent high. So if you look at the US indices, the S&P, the Dow, the Nasdaq, in fact, the Nasdaq is down more than 10% from its recent high. So yes, we are in a bear market with that respect. But if you look at the market's price action for the last number of days, we clawed back some of those losses. But today, traders are still very much trying to digest the new message which came out from the Federal Reserve. And a bit of a surprise in that particular message is that, yes, now the Federal Reserve is not only going to increase interest rate, and let me say that actually this is going to be an aggressive interest rate hike, but they are also going to shrink the balance sheet. And that is, like, once again, has triggered that risk off trade and possibly pushing the markets further deep in the bear territory.
What about talk of a stock market bubble that's about to burst?
Well, look, valuations are rich, especially when we go in the tech space. Hence, we are seeing more intense sell-off for the Nasdaq index in comparison to the S&P 500 index, which represents the overall sentiment about the market. Because after all, you're talking about the top 500 companies or even the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the top 30 industrial stocks over in the US. So if you compare the three different indices, you do see more sell-off in the tech, and that's primarily because of valuations being too rich.
You talked about inflation being a big issue and the worry of interest rates going up in the US and elsewhere. Explain to us why higher interest rates impact stock markets, particularly technology stocks, which you've been referring to.
Primarily because the input cost is too high, and that squeezes your margin, your profit margin. And especially for the tech sector, given the fact that we have already seen quite a number of issues with the supply chain, and still some factories are closed, deliveries are not, we don't know. I mean, look at the recent forecast from Tesla, which came out last night. They're still very much indicating to supply chain issues. Record profit, but still warnings on supply chain issues. And when you join that with the higher energy prices, which are very much feeding into the manufacturing, then the issue becomes a lot more apparent, and then why these tech companies are really getting sold.
If you are a long-term investor in the stock market, how worried should you be? If investor was asking you advice, what would you be saying to them?
First of all, we don't really give advice. You have to match your own risk profile according to what your goals are. But the general comment is, yes, I concur with you. The markets do claw back the losses, and we do see higher highs and higher lows, the very definition of uptrend. Now, given the fact that we have seen a very decent sell-off, and the technicals, they indicate the markets are certainly oversold. This is a perfect time for one to prepare the shopping list and start buying as the market is still going down. Because over the next week or two, we are still going to get a lot of earnings over in the United States. That means higher volatility in the stock market. And that is going to bring more opportunities. So big names, big tech names, because tech has always been the sector which kind of rides out of this particular storm the fastest. It comes out of this storm the fastest than any other sector. So again, keep an eye on these particular sectors. One example is, look at Netflix. Analysts, they were expecting a number which was completely bonkers. If you look at the fundamentals of the company from Netflix, they are not only going into entertainment, but now they are also leaping into a gaming industry. The fundamentals are strong. The stock is down more than 30% year to date. The future is still very much seems to be very optimistic for Netflix. That is a great opportunity. Same goes for Tesla. Same for NIO or Rivian, the new upcoming companies within the electric vehicle space. I think that is the opportunity where investors should be very much looking at. Or even in Europe, if we are talking about, how about Volkswagen? Because over there, in Europe, now, especially in London, you out of every 10 cars, 6 cars are hybrid. That is the trend where you wanted to really bank on.
Really interesting to get your perspective. Naeem Aslam, Chief Market Analyst at Evertrade.
Thank you for having me.
Around the world, inflation is biting and where it hurts most. Food prices hit a 10-year high last year, and that's put up the cost of the weekly shop for families at every supermarket and grocery store. Meat and fruits have become luxury items, and families are being forced to make tough decisions about their diets. And the cost isn't expected to fall anytime soon. If anything, it's going to increase further, but perhaps at a more moderate pace. The International Monetary Fund estimates rises of around 4.5% this year. The United Nations says world food prices jumped 28% in 2021 before easing slightly in December. The Food and Agricultural Organization says its vegetable oil price index reached an all-time high, increasing 65.8% from 2020. Meanwhile, the cereal price index reached its highest annual level since 2012, rising 27.2%. But the biggest gainers were maize, up 44%, and wheat, gaining just over 31%. The sugar price index rose 29.8%, reaching its highest level since 2016. The dairy price index averaged 16.9%, higher than in 2020. The meat price index was broadly stable in December, but rose 12.7% through the year as a whole. Well, the FAO says soaring food prices are hitting low-income households hard, and poorer populations in countries that are reliant on imports are particularly at risk. It's feared that the high cost of food could fuel unrest in some parts of the world, like the Middle East and North Africa. And there are growing concerns about a hunger crisis in countries affected by conflict and drought on top of the rising cost of living. Well, it all appears to be bleak. Let's get more into the global food situation now with Máximo Torero Cullen, the Chief Economist and Assistant Director General of the Economic and Social Development Department at the UN Food and Agriculture Organization. He joins us from Rome. Thank you for your time. Why are we seeing this sustained rise in food prices?
There are several reasons. The first one is a significant demand, a strong demand by large food importers. And the year 2021 saw a strong international demand, particularly by large emerging economies. At the same time, we have been observing significant increase in transportation costs, particularly for container shipments. The third cause of this is the high prices for agricultural inputs, and notably fertilizers, which is something that is happening in the last months. And this is a linkage between the energy sector and the fertilizer sector. As the prices of energy go up, the fertilizer prices will also go up. The fourth reason is linked to energy prices and oil prices, which as they increase, it creates a demand for biofuels. And the input for biofuels comes from staple commodities and is also being used for feedstock. And finally, a structural reason is adverse weather. And we have seen unfavorable weather in the last months, which have affected some key producing countries. And this includes La Niña weather phenomena, which went from August 2020 to April 2021. So there are all these drivers that are behind the prices that we're observing today.
Okay, we'll talk about the weather impact in a minute. First, let's talk about energy prices and fertilizer prices, which are high and continue to remain high. What is this going to mean going forward for food prices? Will we continue to see the impact on production as a result?
Yeah, the fertilizers prices has risen substantially and higher during the last peak period of 2008. And these higher fertilizer prices in turn reflecting higher energy gas prices and export restrictions and geopolitical tensions with the high output prices, and also the problems of affordability to them. So for sure, as the prices of energy will go up, what we know in historical relationships is that the fertilizer prices will also start to increase and go deeper. And it will become even worse if we have export restrictions, which some countries are starting to put in place. So this is pretty worrisome, because what it means is that the poorest regions won't be able to access to it because of the cost will be higher. And as a result of that, that could be affecting their planting, and it could be affecting the harvest for the following year.
Tell us a bit more about climate change and how it's impacted food prices in different parts of the world.
We need to understand that in terms of what happens of climate, we need to be clear from the outset that when we talk about changes over the past few months, we mean climate variability or extreme weather events, not slow onset climate change. And these extreme weather events do indeed become more frequent and arguably also more severe. The 2021 Atlantic hurricane season was the third most active on record, and hurricanes such as Ida were taking a heavy toll on crop production. They also destroy transportation and processing infrastructure. With these extreme events becoming more frequent, crop yields are expected to become more variable, and price volatility, of course, will be a consequence of this. But we need to understand that farmers and the agricultural sector is used to cope with these extreme weather events in the short term. Now, if we move now to climate change, which is the slow onset, potentially positively a very small increase in temperature, particularly in higher latitudes. So, for example, temperatures increases have already helped the Black Sea grain suppliers like Russia and Ukraine and raising grains and oilseeds production. This is likely to continue as long as these temperatures increase and remain contained. By contrast, potentially very negative effects in the MENA region, where the precipitation is likely to become insufficient to produce traditional food staples such as barley or wheat. And similarly, in sub-Saharan Africa, maize yields could decline by over 30% in Southern Africa by 2030. And in South Asia, we could see over 10% lower yields of maize, rice, and millet. So the effects will be heterogeneous among the different regions of the world. But one thing for sure, that this long trend increase in temperature or increase in extreme events in the long term, as I mentioned before, will be that we will also have more uncertainty in the agricultural sector and more variability and volatility. And that more uncertainty is something that we need to prepare, and we need to increase resilience of countries to be able to prepare to these potential changes in the long term because of climate change.
So what is the solution?
So one way to do that is, for example, to create mechanisms of insurance, which could help countries to cope better. We have been seeing significant innovation in the weather insurance sector for agriculture, but it still is far from where it should be. Developed countries subsidize substantially insurance, but developing countries don't have those resources. So there we need to develop market-oriented solutions. And for that, we need significant information on weather and weather trends so that the reinsurance companies can estimate better the loss function and can produce a service of insurance, index or not index, that could be provided at a lower cost for these economies to be able to afford. That's one way. The second way is to work with science and technology and try to innovate and try to figure how we can better manage the water so that in situations of lack of water or in situations of excess of water, these countries can cope better in the medium and long term with these potential changes. And the third element is foresight, trying to better know what will be the significant changes that will be expected in the future so that farmers can be ready to be able to change what they produce and how they produce to be able to cope with this in the longer term.
Máximo Torero Cullen, many thanks for your time and your expertise. Chief Economist and Assistant Director General of the Economic and Social Development Department, the UN Food and Agriculture Organization. Thank you.
Thank you.
And oil prices are rising too, reaching a 7-year high at more than $88 a barrel. That's another reason for soaring inflation. Major oil-producing countries have promised to increase production, but shortfalls in countries such as Nigeria raise questions about whether output increases can be enough to satisfy demand. Now, Nigeria is Africa's leading oil producer, but the sector continues to struggle with many challenges. It has recently introduced a long-awaited reform, the Petroleum Industry Act, to try and boost the sector. It's also planned to lift fuel subsidies, which costs the country up to $7 billion a year in revenue. But for the moment, that's been put on hold. So what change could the new legislation bring to the country? Kamal Santamaria asked the Nigerian Minister of Petroleum, Temipre Silva, this and other questions earlier.
That's really at the core of what we are expecting to happen this year. The passage of the BIA last year marks for us a new horizon. We believe that it's going to drive a lot of development in the sector. But in addition to that, we're expecting a lot from the all the refineries right now in the country are under rehabilitation, and we believe that a lot of movement will happen in that sector of petroleum product supply. We know that not all the refineries will be delivered this year, but at least we are hoping that Dangote refinery especially will be delivered. Also, of course, the AKK pipeline project is also on. There are a lot of ongoing projects that we believe are going to contribute to a lot of growth in the sector this year.
So it's
the reason for optimism.
It's all very good for the sector, clearly, and there's going to be a lot of investment in the sector. I think what people certainly in Nigeria want to know is, will they see the effects? Will the economy benefit? Will it trickle down, pardon the phrasing, to the everyday Nigerian person?
Well, that's we expect that it will always get down to the people. I mean, the president is all about the people of Nigeria. That's why, you know, for example, even the issues around deregulation of petroleum product, the president is quite slow to doing it because he feels that it's going to impact the people negatively. The hope is that when a lot of these investments come on stream, it will help the product supply to the people and also help to ease the plight of the average Nigerian. Mm. We also expect that overall it will contribute to the economic growth. For example, if we are able to produce a lot of our petroleum products from Nigeria, we believe that it's going to be able to bring down the price of petroleum products for the common man. And generally, it's all about the people, really.
Right, and that's important because, as I understand it, Nigeria actually wants to start scrapping or scaling back fuel subsidies. Now, any country where I have seen that happen, there has been some sort of pushback and it's even developed into further anger against the government. Is it a risk doing that?
Well, yes, we've been in a discussion with labor unions. We expect that there'll be pushbacks usually. That's why we're making it very gradual. We are also expecting to give an alternative. We're looking at the possibility of giving an alternative to the people. For example, if PMS prices go up, we believe that if we introduce another fuel, which is autogas, which the people can afford, it will help to ease the burden on the people. And also, we also know that it will result in significant increase in personal expenditure, I mean, with our people. So we are also looking at some palliative measures to take. All that just to ensure that the effect on the people is minimized as much as possible.
Minister, the wider Nigerian economy, I want to ask you about that because we are talking a lot at the moment about inflation. It's been recognised as a problem in a lot of places, the United States, Turkey's been talking about it as well. I see inflation hit 18% in March last year, food inflation in Nigeria 23% as well. That's not good news. And I wonder what Nigeria is doing to manage the situation.
Nigeria is doing everything economically to ensure that we bring down inflation. There are inflation drivers. We know that especially the energy sector, the supply of petroleum products is one of the drivers of the energy prices. I mean, the price of products is a driver of inflation as well. And that's why in this sector, we have tried to ensure that we keep down the price of products, petroleum products to the people, while ensuring that they are fully supplied. Mm. That's what we're doing for now to ensure that we keep our inflation under control.
Minister Silva, we really appreciate your time today. Thank you for joining us on Al Jazeera.
Thank you.
And that is our show for this week. But I want to know what you think and what you want to see on the show. Tweet or DM me at Marlene Saeed. And if you're tweeting, then please use the hashtag AJCCC. Or if email's more your thing, counting the costs at aljazeera.net is our address. But there's more for you online at aljazeera.com/CTC. That will take you straight to our page, which has individual reports, links, and entire episodes for you to catch up on. That is it for this edition of Counting the Cost. I'm Marlene Saeed from the whole team. Thanks for joining us. The news on Al Jazeera is next.